on the other side of the tape ran out, I was talking about the house that hadn't been fixed up like good to live in. Terrible paint job, no kitchen cabinets built in. I called the production superintendent up in the area. He said nothing could be done. He said that was all they could do. All they could do was to use the paint that they had left over, and that they couldn't build in kitchen cabinets because nobody else had built in kitchen cabinets. And I said, well, I was promised that they would be. And he said, well, they won't be. I then called this assistant production manager in Tulsa and told him, and he said, well, if he says it can't be done, it can't be done. So by getting some stuff and some cabinet boards and stuff like that on an expense account and getting a plant carpenter, we built in some cabinets. And that became, through the company that later became known as the Avant Dollins incident. Avant Dollins kitchen cabinet incident became known as he got all upset when he found out that I'd built him in and had done it with an expense account and plant carpenter, and he was extremely unhappy. But the assistant production manager apparently pacified him, and to where he was going to have to put up with me. I don't know whether he and this other fellow that was wanting me fired or conspired or not to got together. I don't know about that, but they could have. Anyway, I got the trouble all straightened out. We got to making saleable products, and running, everything was running good, and sailing along nicely, and came in January, and it was January the 14th, or January the 15th, one of those days. Anyway, it was on a morning during shift break, and this was one morning out of the week that I was the only person there between 7 and 8 o'clock in the morning. And this morning was 2 degrees below zero, and all the gauge glasses on the tankets were frozen up, and everything was in a mess, and I was trying to get the reports made out, and Ev showed this fellow out of the Tulsa office, the assistant advisor for gasoline processing to the production manager, walks in. I asked him what he was doing out on such a cold, disagreeable morning as this was, and he says, well, I had to come out and tell you that your job as chief operator for this fractionating plant has been eliminated. I said, well, what's that mean? He says, well, you can go to roustabouting if you want to. I roustabout pay. I says, I resign, and I walked off right then. Started my 2 weeks vacation I had coming. He was pretty much of a mess until the other fellows got there. And finally, I had to bring a man down from the plant on the hill that was the main plant, and bring him down there and let him get the stuff figured out. And 2 days later, after my resignation had gone into the written resignation had gone into the Tulsa office, a man called me up and on the company line and told me his name, and I says, well, how'd you get on this line? He says, well, I am now the new head of the gas processing department, natural gas processing department for the Shell Petroleum Corporation, and the new reworking. And he says, I'd like to have you come in and talk to me about this resignation. So I said, okay, I'll be in there this afternoon. He says, that's fine. I went in, and I knew the man, and he knew me, too. And he'd come over from another company. And he says, now, I understand the situation you've been in up there. And he says, I don't know why this other fellow has got it in for you that way, but he says, I know that you can run that place like it should be run. And he says, I want to keep you on, I want you to withdraw this resignation. I says, I will withdraw it for a $50 a month raise in pay. And he says, well, let me go talk. So he went off. I don't know who he talked to, and he come back, and he said, they offered $25. I said, nope, $50 raise in pay. That's the only thing that's going to keep let me withdraw this resignation. He says, well, let me go talk some more. So he went off. After a while, he came back, and he says, $35 is all they will do. They won't do another cent over that. I said, okay, and the resignation stands. He says, well, I sure wish you'd reconsider. And he says, I think I can get the other $15 for very long. And I said, well, I think it's time for me to go on when people are against me the way it seemed to be. So I finished out the month with Shell as so my vacation ended, which was finished at the end of the month of January. And then I pulled out. Spent part of the time interviewing people, looking for a new position, and just about had one working when the 1937 February recession hit, as they called it, and people began to cut back again instead of going forward. By this time, it was right near the end of February, and I think it was the next to the last day of February, I went into a company and see a friend of mine, and he says, you know, I just happened to think that our old friend, Mr. K, is building a plant, and I'll bet that he would like to have you. And says, here's where you can write him. So I wrote him, and he says, he called me right back. is as you get down here to Corpus Christi and get here as quick as you can. It is, I want you to install our meters and regulators, controllers, and whatnot, and see to it that it's installed. And says as you come through Dallas, stop and pick up instruction books at the Foxborough Company and the Honeywell Company. This took place about noon, or just a little before noon, and the rest of the day I got things ready to head out for South Texas. Early the next morning, it was raining. However, I took off and got into Dallas just after noon, picked up by the instruction books at Foxborough and Honeywell. After spending a considerable time finding those two places, and they turned out to be within three blocks of each other, and I started on down U.S. Highway 77, and they were working on that road around Georgetown and that area of Texas north of Austin, and held me up so that it was fairly late and I got into Austin. I found a motel and put up for the night, and I went to slept until early in the morning. I took off again early the next morning. I had asked the night before about the roads on to Corpus Christi and was advised to take off of 77 and go down through Seguin and Kennedy in that way and hit Highway 9 that was just being constructed to go into Corpus Christi. I did that, and going through the town of Beeville, I had to cross a railroad track, which was several curves I had to make before I got out of Beeville completely. And at one of these corners that was exceedingly short corner, I'd come very slow, and there was a fellow standing there wanting a ride. He was dressed very neatly, and he looked okay. I picked him up, and he said he was going to Corpus Christi, and he had a job cooking in a cafe in Corpus Christi and was trying to get to the job. I was driving right well speed because I was somewhat late getting down what he wanted me to get there, and I was really rolling it then because the roads was good and dry and it wasn't raining at the time. About 70 miles or so out of Corpus Christi, approaching a little town, and I heard a nail go into a tire. I got stopped before the tire went flat, put the spare on. This fellow that was with me says, "How in the world did you know that a nail had gone into your tire?" I said, "I heard it." He says, "I don't see how you're driving at 80 miles an hour, you can hear a nail go into a tire." I said, "Well, it's practice." While was putting the spare on in this little town, under a filling station, this fellow kept looking down the road for another ride. None came along. I got ready to go. I got in. I said, "You going?" He looked at me, and finally he just got in. I said, "Well, I guess I'd better just slow down a little. I said, I'm somewhat late already, and I'm going to take it easy till I get another tire, get that tire fixed and have a spare." He says, "Thank God." And I found out that if he could, anyway, he thought he could have got into Corpus Christi without finishing the ride with me, he would have. And he's, when I got to Corpus Christi, pulled into the front of the, they told me to come to the Plaza Hotel in Corpus Christi. I pulled in front of the Nixon Cafe across the street from the Plaza Hotel in Corpus Christi, and parked the vacant parking place, which had a parking meter set up in front of it. And I didn't pay any attention to the parking meter. I went across the street to the hotel. This fellow had been with me. He was parked right in front of the Nixon Cafe where he was going to get his, where he had his job promised. So I went across to the hotel, and the man that had talked to me to come down wasn't in the room, but his wife was there, and she told me how to get to the plant. I went back across the street to my car, and there was a cop walking around and looking at it. I walked up and started to unlock it, and he says, "Is this your car, is it?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "You didn't ante." I said, "What do you mean I didn't ante?" He says, "Well, this is a parking meter here in front of it, and you're supposed to put money in it for parking." And I said, "Oh, is that, I thought that is, I thought that was a hitching post left over from the horse and buggy days." And he says, "You damn okay, get in your car and get on out of here." One thing I was glad that the officer didn't know about, and that was when I was a senior in college, another fellow and I had taken a course together, and we worked together, and this course was in instrument design for things, and he'd, the instructor had assigned this fellow and I particularly to, gave us a blueprint and asked us to make this in our laboratory course of this precision machine design course, and we got the thing made. We had no idea what it was, except that it was some kind of a machine to, that you put money into and time something. We asked him what that was. He says, "That's a parking meter to put on the street for use for parking cars and collecting rent for while you're parked there." And come to find out, that was the original or the first parking meter ever made. However, it was very, very crude, and it didn't catch on until a year or two later when a newspaper in Oklahoma City ran a contest among the students there in the college to design parking meters, and the instructor was the man that run the thing. They made one, or they chose a design. One fellow made one in this fellow's course. They chose it and as the leading design, and set it up in front of the post office in Oklahoma City to see how it worked. And it collected money right and left. And though this instructor finally set up a company called Halometer Parking Company, Parking Meter Company, and they made parking meters. This parking meter that had been in front of my car there in Corpus Christi was a Halometer parking meter. That officer had known that story, I would have probably still been in jail for ignoring the thing. I started out back to this plant, and I stopped at a place because I didn't know just where to turn off of the road and wasn't marked. And I was going to stop what I thought was the place to turn off. There was a filling station right close, and I thought I would ask. I pulled up there and stopped, and another car pulled out of that corner and saw me and stopped, and two fellows got out, come over, and both of them I'd gone to school with. One of them I'd graduated from college with some 10 years before, and there he was the chief engineer of that company, and he told me where to go, and where I got down there, which was about 2 miles from where I was, he told me where to look, and I'd find the man I was hunting that would tell me what to do, and so on. This happened to be the first gas processing plant ever built in South Texas. It was on a line from Beaumont through to San Antonio out to Del Rio. It was the first plant to be built south of that line, which in later years there was many, many, many gas processing plants built, somewhat over 100, I think it was. I got there at the plant and found the man, and he says, I'll take you around and introduce you to our construction superintendent, but the first thing I want you to do is install a steam meter on that steam line there from the boilers, and he says, I want it installed properly where it'll work.
I had had considerable experience installing steam meters and operating steam meters, office meters that are, is, and all, most of it was bad. So I went to work and I fixed the two pots, great big ones, about 3 feet of 4-inch pipe for each one of them, and that was to give me a constant head of water on each side of the meter and keep steam from getting into the meter, which ruins the meter and boils the mercury off of it. And I went, got those pots made and installed that meter after I had met the construction superintendent. The next day, the head man came around again and he looked at that steam meter. He says, why didn't you use a couple full joints of pots there? He says, it looks like those are very, plenty big. And I said, well, I used a couple of four-inch pipe that was out in the junk pile there, and scrap pipe, so I figured using plenty. I had the insulator insulate the two pots real heavy with insulation, and insulated the lines part way down to the meter, and I figured that meter would work in good shape after that. It proved right. With a helper and myself, we installed all the rest of the controllers, temperature controllers, pressure controllers, and flow controllers that had to be installed. Got all the controlling instruments and recording instruments ready to go. And on the next Monday, we started up, started the plant up, started making gasoline. And I went out one night and got the level controls for the boilers all set so they were working in good shape. And later in the week, they offered me a job of assistant superintendent at the plant. And I studied it a while and finally decided against it. There's places to find places to live around the area was practically nil. And I didn't want to fight that, finding a place to live and getting my furniture and everything moved down there. So I went back home on the next Monday. I was there exactly 2 weeks. On my way home, I decided I'd go into business myself for fixing up a truck with equipment in it to do unfired pressure vessel and boiler testing and working on instruments and meters. I had a ASME unfired and boiler testing stamps where I could do that work and it'd be legal. And so I started making the rounds after I got home with various companies trying to find them to test their tanks. And nobody wanted their tanks tested for some reason. Said they didn't need it. However, I saved the very last to go talk to the Gulf Oil Corporation. I went to the Gulf and talked to the right party there about testing their tanks and boilers. They said, no, they didn't need to do that. Same thing with the other companies that told me. So I hit up the man to go to work for Gulf, and he said, well, now I think we can talk about that. So he went and saw somebody in the company, and he came back and offered me a job. I accepted, and he sent me to have a physical, and passed it okay, and then they told me to report to the mission plant on May the 1st, and that was sometime along around the 20th of April. On April the 27th, Shell Petroleum Corporation had a tank blow up at their Pampas plant and killed two men. And so when I reported at the mission plant for Gulf, which is near Seminole, Oklahoma, the first thing they had me do was to go through and test all their tanks, which if I had got that job to do that, I could have made enough to start my own company and made it, because there was a lot of companies having their tanks tested after that. Gulf had hired me along with quite a number of other fellows, some 200, to do a bunch of special work that they had planned. They'd set aside around $5 million to do all this special work. And one of the jobs was to completely remodify and bring up to date and make efficient a plant at Keeper, Oklahoma. However, they'd been drug into a price-fixing suit by the government, and though they were delaying until that was done before they started on this special work. And so at this plant, mission plant, I did a little bit of everything. I run the office at times. I worked on engines as a mechanic. I did lots of different things there at that plant.
Sometime in July, I got a call one day that my mother was in very bad condition and wasn't expected to live. She had broken her hip sometime before, and it had never healed properly. She was having trouble. So I got out there to Woodward, Oklahoma, where they lived, and she died that night. Sometime after I got back from being at my mother's funeral, I got a call from Continental Oil Company in Ponca City wanting to see me. I'd had an application with them for some time, and I went up and visited their vice president in charge of refineries, and they had a job at a refinery in Artesia, New Mexico, and this vice president and the president of the company and another fellow in the company were all at odds who they should put there, and they never did put a man there. They never did decide and run the plant without that maintenance supervisor that they was engineer that they were going to put me on, and so nobody ever got that job. Sometime not long after that, I got a call from the Mid-Continent vice president of the Clark Brothers Engine Company, and I went to see him and talked to him, and he says, go into my secretary and write out a letter of application, which I did, and that was one of the most terrible jobs I ever had to do applying for a job, is dictate a letter of application to a man's secretary that I didn't know and she didn't know me, and it was a task that as I had never did hardly any dictating before. When I got home from that, I had another call from a power plant or a electric utility company and to wanting me to apply for a job there. So I went to see them and applied for that job, and one of the questions asked me on the application blank was how much salary I expected, and I named $250 a month. This was in 1937, when $250 a month was a pretty fair salary for a job like that. In fact, it was a good salary for a job like that. For the Clark Brothers Engine Company job, I hadn't been asked to state any salary that I expected. A few days later, I got a call back from the Clark Brothers man telling me to come in on a Sunday morning and see their vice president from Olean, New York, that he wanted to interview me. So I went in and interviewed this fella, and they'd all but told me where to come in and hang my hat in 2 weeks when I leave the Gulf, and I started to leave, and the man says, how much money are you expecting? We haven't discussed that. I says, well, sir, I happen to know that you're figuring on $250 a month for this job. and that will suit me to start. About a week later, I got word that I didn't get the job because I hadn't asked for enough money. They thought that I should have figured my worth was more than what they were willing to pay to start with, and that I should have asked for more, and then they could have compromised, or they might have given it to me. Anyway, I didn't get that job. I went home and got word from this electric utility company that I didn't get that job because I'd asked for too much money. So there I was in a quandary, what to do. Now, when you apply for a job and ask you how much money, what do you expect?
A short time later, the Clark Brothers called me again and offered me a job as a engine setter at a certain salary and my living expenses, but I'd have been away from home most of the time. I probably wouldn't have been able to get home more than 3 or 4 or 5 times a year, that many. So I went up and told my boss it was more money than what I was getting. I went and told my boss at golf, and he said, well, we'll raise you to that then, and I'll have a special job for you up at one of our little plants up in northern Oklahoma in Burbank Field. It was near a little town of Webb City. So he says you're going to have to be a diplomat to get that there, because the superintendent there at the plant is an old friend of Andrew Carnegie, the founder of the Gulf Oil Corporation, and says he won't leave until he gets good and ready. So that was in the days before retirement at 65. He was almost that then, but he wasn't fixing to retire right away. The boss in the Tulsa office said that, says, now what we want you to do up there is cut down on the gas consumption. We're using about 5 times as much gas for fuel as we need to, I think, and I'd like to have you cut it way down. So I went up there and I talked to the old fella and asked him some questions, and he says, well, I know something needs to be done here. I don't know just what to do right now. He said, one thing, we're pumping too much oil, absorption oil. So I started out looking, and I found out on the absorption oil they had 2 6-inch valves that were leaking more oil than they needed to circulate. So I made provisions, and I got a hold of a couple 3-inch valves, and we put those in. That cut our steam down a whole lot, because it took a lot of steam to pump that oil. And then it was just before cold weather was going to set in, and I looked around how they did this to keep the stuff from freezing up in various places, and they had it just little steam lines pouring right on to the thing. So I put copper tubing coils in, and that insulated the things. All the places it would freeze, I insulated them with a copper tubing coil inside, and I put exhaust steam through there, and that saved a lot more steam. When I went there, they were using 2 100 horsepower marine type boilers and 5 75 horsepower boiler horsepower locomotive type boilers or oil field type boilers. And in 2 weeks, I had that shut down where the 200 horsepower return fire tube marine boilers would handle a load and be loafing. So that was a good deal. And the old man, the old superintendent, he said, boy, he says, you sure did a good job there. He said, just what I would have thought needed to be done, all right. He said, you managed to get it done. I couldn't. And then cold weather set in. cold weather. It was an unusual winter. It froze hard the first time along about the 5th of November, which was very unusual there in that area to have a hard freeze that stayed on for months and weeks at a time. And actually, it stayed on to last the first of the year. And the field boys out in the field began to have a lot of trouble with their pumping units. They had a little gas engine they was changing from gas engines on and pumping well central powers to individual pumping jacks on each well driven by electric motor through herringbone gear speed reducers. And those herringbone gears were being cut out faster than we could get them and put them in, and they were quite costly. So an old fella, the head of the mechanical engineering department, came out there and came around the plant and was talking. He asked me if I knew anything about herringbone gears. I said no. He told me what the trouble was. We went to work and we didn't do any good. And so we went into the technical library in Tulsa and started reading articles about everything we could find on that kind of stuff, which there wasn't very much of it going on, much article written. Anyway, I'd read so much stuff that it had me all confused. So I was picking up other stuff, and I started reading about where down in the South Pole the bird expedition had been having trouble with the same thing on the gears for propeller reduction on their airplane. So they found out it was extremely hard ice, where high pressure and extreme colds, this ice had formed and was approaching the hardness of diamonds and was cutting the thing out. So we devised a method of keeping all water out of those places, and that solved the problem. And the old boy says, well, the bird's expedition to the South Pole was paid for us here, whatever it cost, whoever it cost. It's paid for itself right now in this. Just before I'd gone up to this place, I think it was on the 27th day of September, Donna Jean, our second daughter, was born in Seminole, Oklahoma, and I just got to go home every weekend to see her and see the rest of the family. And I was getting kind of tired of doing that when the boss told me, he says, well, first of the year, you go down and report to the plant at Kiefer, Oklahoma, which is about a mile outside the little town of Kiefer, about 17 miles out of Tulsa, and said, you can run the office there and start studying everything, because that's the plant we're going to start work on as quick as they release that $5 million to do this updating of all the equipment. So on the first day of January, we moved to Sepulpa, Oklahoma, and I reported down there the morning of the 2nd of January at this Kiefer plant and started running the office and helping out in any other way I could, which was quite a bit, because this old plant was 20-some-odd years old at that time, and actually it was nearly 30 years old, and it was wasn't too efficient at all. And I started studying that, and I had plans practically all worked out in a little while what to do there. And then I took sick, and I had a rugged time, and it turned out a little later that I'd had a perforated ulcer, and they had to operate on me, and they did what they called a gastroenterostomy. I made a new opening from the stomach, and I was off about a month with that. However, the Gulf treated me in very good shape, paid me full wages all the time I was in the hospital and while I was recuperating.